Welcome to Hochoka Podcast.
Few things are more arresting than the smell of burning sweetgrass, according to Dr. Damian Costello. He says reconnecting with this relative, which some people call the hair of Mother Earth, can help re-indigenize our faith and heal wounds that affect our planet. Hello, Mitaki Epi, and welcome to Hochoka, here at the center of St. Joseph's Indian School's campus. I'm Scott Wooster, today's Hochoka host. We're glad you have joined our circle to hear Dr. Damian Costello. He joins us to bring another fresh perspective on Catholicism through an indigenous lens. Today we explore the fragrant holy grass, also known as sweetgrass. Welcome, Damian.
Thanks, Scott. Good to be back.
Awesome to have you back in Hochoka once again. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna lead off with a pretty simple question. I just want to talk about sweetgrass and what it is for our viewers who might not be familiar with it.
Sweetgrass, if you're not familiar with it, you actually are, because it smells like a very intense version of the mowed grass you've smelled since you were a kid. I can remember when I first picked up a braid of sweetgrass and smelled it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's what my neighbors across the street, their hayfield smelled like mm-hmm. when it was cut. Very intense grass smell. Now, it's one of the four sacred medicines, along with tobacco, sage, cedar,
yep.
and is burned to purify, to cleanse, to make sacred. But it's sort of the medicine that sort of sits in the background a bit, you might say. You know, we're familiar, you go to Sundance, you go to Inipi, and cedar and sage are very prominent, mm-hmm. always being burned. Sweetgrass, not so much. You know, you see it in the dashboards of cars. Mm-hmm. It's occasionally burned at healing ceremonies, or I should say often, but yeah. it's not yeah. as common in daily practice.
Okay, yep. And I think if you're, as somebody who's been at St. Joe's mm-hmm. for a long time, of course, it's just kind of a fixture of what we have here. So I see it, you see it quite often mm-hmm. here, and it's burned occasionally here. And have seen it at ceremonies too, but some people wouldn't be familiar with mm-hmm. that. So I think that's helpful. So when we first talked, we first met in season one of Hochoka, and we visited quite a bit about Black Elk, and he's the Lakota Catholic catechist nominated for sainthood mm-hmm. in the Roman Catholic Church. What do you think his experience or his idea of this would be of this fragrant holy grass?
Well, a lot of people know about Nicholas Black Elk through the two books that he collaborated with, Black Elk Speaks, which is yeah. the story of his life up to Wounded Knee, about 25 years old. Mm-hmm. And then the other classic, The Sacred Pipe, mm-hmm. which is his account of the seven sacred rites of the Lakota. You know, so if you want to learn about the Sun Dance or an EP with Vision Quest, that's a book you'd go to. And so in that book, he recounts prayers throughout it in songs. And he often talks about the use of sweetgrass. So for him, I think it was more prominent at his time and in his particular version of the tradition. And I love how he prays with sweetgrass. For him, he talks about bringing all the relatives together. Like this fragrant smoke will go throughout the universe and make relatives of all beings. Mm-hmm. So if you think of sage as being that sort of purifying medicine, has the power to bring it, to wipe away the negative, sweetgrass sort of brings things together and makes relatives a unitive force.
Yeah. So the way I'm understanding mm-hmm. from your interpretation, which is Black Elk's interpretation, right? Which would be kind of a living symbol or embodiment of Madakiasan, mm-hmm. or we're all related, or all my relatives, which I think is a pretty powerful thing, and all contained in something that grows here commonly on the prairie. Mm-hmm. Right? You speak about Robin Wall Kimmerer's work and her book, Braiding Sweetgrass. What insights that she has in that book, what can that impart, or what can we learn from her work talking about that, mm-hmm. this pretty amazing plant?
We did a few podcasts for that,
yeah.
Just talking about her work. Robin Wall Kimmerer has been, you know, at the forefront of sort of bringing indigenous wisdom, particularly relating to ecology and the use of plants into the mainstream and helping us to think about plants as our relatives, right? We hear that in ceremony in the Lakota way, but she's bringing that to average people. And sweetgrass is the main relative and image that structures her conversation. She uses the story of the Anishinaabe story of Sky Woman to sort of start off the whole book. And briefly, she falls from the sky world and reaches out and grabs the tree of life, and in her hands falls with some of its foliage. And the animals rescue her. It's just a water world at this point. Muskrat brings up some earth, puts it on turtle's back, and that becomes Mother Earth. And from those seeds, sweetgrass is the first plant and is called the hair of Mother Earth. And so in the Anishinaabe way, that's sort of their version of all our relatives, right? I loved how you captured that it embodies that spirit of bringing all the relatives together.
Yeah, and that story does too, mm-hmm. as well. I had not heard that until today, so mm-hmm. I appreciate hearing that story. Mm-hmm. And that's in the book?
It's in the book. That's how she starts the book. And it reappears throughout the book, sweetgrass. One of the unique things about sweetgrass is that it needs human interaction to thrive. You know, by default in a Western way, we think anything humans do is going to impact the earth in a negative way. Mm-hmm. We often do. We are literally destroying the earth. Mm-hmm. But we know the wisdom of the elders in indigenous ways, human interaction is necessary for the earth to thrive. If you make relatives, if you honor and you make gifts to our relatives and to the earth, they reciprocate with gifts. And so in sweetgrass's mm-hmm. case, it needs to be harvested in order to thrive. If you don't, other species will come in and sort of outcompete it. And so one of the experiments mm-hmm. that one of her students did was proving this to a very skeptical scientific university, that actually picking it helps it thrive, and that native communities that use sweetgrass are the places where sweetgrass is found the most.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I would, that's such an interesting concept. I hadn't thought of it in that way. And I've been a guy who's been down on all fours in fields cutting sage before, plants. And of course you don't pull it up out of the ground. You cut it so that it continued to flourish. But through that interaction, it helps it thrive because it continues to grow and it's the same for sweetgrass, which is very interesting.
If we use something, we need it. And if we need it, we take care of it in an indigenous perspective. We mm-hmm. honor it mm-hmm. and we love it. And so if we honor those teachings, never take the first that you find.
Yeah.
Only take half of what you find.
Yeah.
Make a gift, make an offering. You provide the ways for habitat to increase. Now, unfortunately, even in native contexts, we're overexploiting at times. Mm-hmm. But to come back to those teachings and to make them our own means that by interacting, by harvesting, we're actually contributing to the thriving of the ecosystem.
Right, right. One of those almost counterintuitive things mm-hmm. in a way, almost like setting fire to the prairie in the old days in order to heal the land, which seems, if you explained it to a four-year-old, I'm not sure they would understand that. But if you explained it to somebody who understands fires and working the land, they would get that completely.
Great point. And she brings that up. And another little tiny nugget that's relative to the things we talk about, there's saliva in bison that when they eat grass, it helps stimulate growth.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there's that, it's not an accidental relationship that the buffalo have with the grass, but they actually contribute through their consumption of grass to grass flourishing.
Yes. And so this is great because mm-hmm. now we're going to unpack something that is a little tricky for me to understand. Mm-hmm. And you approach things, as we said in the introduction, as a Catholic man seeing your spirituality through an indigenous lens. Is that fair to say that?
Yes, very fair. Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, I have trouble with that juxtaposition a little bit. And I think I can work my way around it if it's explained right. And I think that's what I'm calling you to do here. So you, if in my Catholic upbringing, I've read the Bible, you know, Genesis explains what happened in the Garden of Eden. And we have this piece that says that there's dominion of man over everything, over all animals, over the earth. And maybe that's a simplistic way of for me to say it, but for conversation's sake, let's say it that way. And it worked when the colonization was happening too. Hey, this is ours. We're man, and we can take over whatever we need to. But we're talking about this symbiotic relationship where everything works together down to these minute details like bison saliva, right? Mm-hmm. So how does that juxtaposition work? Does the question make sense?
It absolutely makes sense because I had the same experience. You know, I've always been attracted to indigenous cultures and ways of knowing and found them very inspiring, but had trouble looking at my own tradition that I grew up with. And I can remember a cousin sort of needling me about this, right? Because he knew I was Catholic and took it seriously. He's like, oh yeah, Genesis, right? God gave dominion over the earth to Adam and Eve. You know, take it, do whatever you want to it, trash it, it's yours, right? And sort of calling me on that. And that's something that I struggled with. But one of my colleagues, so where I work is an indigenous theological school that tries to bring the best of indigenous wisdom and spiritual traditions alongside with Christian traditions to allow them to inform each other. And so he's a biblical scholar, Dr. Danny Zacharias, and he's of Cree descent. And he reads Genesis as if it was an indigenous story. And he will say, and my colleagues will say, you know, you modern Western people have been pretty good at claiming Jesus as a white man who, you know, maybe would drive cars and use computers. He's from a tribal people that lived on the land, and their ceremonies connected them to the land. And if you read Genesis, it actually says something very different than what you people 2,000 years later have been saying. So, you know, we can go into great detail about this, but his point is that if you look at the text in Genesis, the 6 days of creation, God creates different parts of creation. Let there be light. God creates light. God says the light is good. When you get to the part about the earth and the creation of vegetation, he says, let there be green things that grow from the earth. And in the text it says, and the earth brought forward the green plants. So the earth is the actual agent in this story, co-creating with God. So when we talk about Mother Earth, that is in the text. It has a spiritual potency of its own, much like in indigenous stories. And the second half to that is that God, when he places Adam and Eve in the garden, he says, the translations we often get will say, to till and keep the earth. Right. And so in my mind, I think of those sort of 19th century paintings of the old man, you know, in sort of a New England dress with his hoe standing next to his wife.
The gleaners.
Yes, exactly. The language is actually covenantal language. Relational language is the same verbs that you would use for keeping the covenant, for doing ceremony in the Old Testament. So if you translate it faithfully, in the way that it's translated elsewhere, it should be translated as to conform to the earth. So that flips the agency all around.
It does, yeah.
You're not taking care of it or dominating it. You're placing it yourself in its care, and you become like the earth, just like you conform yourself to God's sacred teachings. Not a rule, a list of rules that you sort of arbitrarily keep, but you conform yourself to a relationship with the Creator.
So I love that way of seeing things because as I said in the header to the question, it's oversimplifying things. And in the way I put it, it's not an either or question. It's almost always more complex than you would immediately think. And the way that you've explained that, for me, is something that I can take with me. And it's hard, like you said, it's hard to understand in this modern frame of reference where you have to have it one way or the other. You can't love the earth and at the same time have dominion over it and build resorts and drive your car. And are you an environmentalist or are you not? I mean, that's a kind of a different way of looking at that whole thing. But as you and I sit here, we're literally on land that belonged to the Ocheti Shakowi, to those people. And you'll hear that often in taglines when people are presenting at book festivals or when they're lecturing or that kind of thing. You'll say, I'd like to acknowledge that we're here on this land that belonged to the Ocheti Shakowi at one time or another. And I got to thinking about that. Any member of the Ocheti Shakowi would tell you it never belonged to anybody. Mm. This land was never here to... I wanted to jump and say, yeah, we were here to caretake or steward this land. And you mentioned the image of somebody, you know, with a rake and a hoe, and now it would be somebody driving an air-conditioned John Deere tractor through a field. It's not about caretaking or being a steward of the land. It's about living in harmony with mm-hmm. it in some way, not owning it and understanding. And just to hammer the point home, you're saying that the interpretation that you see in Genesis, and you've read and you've heard it mm-hmm. from other people as well, is not that there was ever any kind of dominion caretaking. I shouldn't say that. Caretaking might be too strong a word, but there was never any piece where it was ours to do whatever mm-hmm. we wanted to do with it. It was about, if you read it in a different way, you see it. So once in a while, you get shown the light in the strangest of places if you look at it right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's your spin on this, which I really like.
I love that you bring up the land acknowledgments and that proper association with the land, mm-hmm. right? That we're not pointing back to sort of the original owners. We're pointing back to the original relationship that the first inhabitants had with this land. Mm-hmm. Right, of relationship, of caretaking, and being taken care of. So essentially what we're doing with the Bible, so to speak, is we're taking it into that context. We're taking it into the context of, say, the Sundance Circle mm-hmm. and reading it from that perspective.
Yep. Yep.
And what comes out of it even further, there's all these passages in it that we never talk about that replicate a lot of Lakota prayers.
Mm-hmm.
There's these long passages where all of creation is praising the Lord, the trees, the mountains, the oceans, mm-hmm. all the different wild animals.
Yep.
They have the same agency as humans.
Mm-hmm.
And we know in Lakota way, the stories, the songs constantly talk about the animals doing things that modern people think only humans can do.
Right. So the idea with both, and this is why mm-hmm. I think it's so easy. Mm-hmm. I'm saying this about you, but it's easy for you to blend mm-hmm. the two, the Catholicism, the indigenous lands, is because they both had the same premise at the beginning. In practice, it wasn't always carried out mm-hmm. the way that it should have been. Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say, but I think there's also a lot of remnants we don't see directly or maybe even never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
So sweetgrass, at some point, my family, we ordered some sweetgrass, we planted it, and we're like, all right, let's get to know this particular relative.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go back to the land yet and live off the land completely, but let's start somewhere.
Right.
And I discovered that it was also native to Northern Europe, the same species.
Okay.
Higher Chloe odorata.
Yeah.
Which the scientific name means fragrant holy grass. Now, I don't know how much you know about science, but scientists are generally not used to, they don't go around naming things with sacred names. But this was encoded within it. I got to read more. Sweetgrass was used in a very similar way historically and continues to be used that way among the Sami, the indigenous people of northern Scandinavia, who have teepee-like dwellings. They herd reindeers. They're indigenous people that are part of the global gatherings of indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And they would continue to use sweetgrass even when they participated in Christian traditions. And there's even this overlap where people would bring sweetgrass into the church on important feast days. And they would scatter it on the ground because of the scent. Mm-hmm. And in history, it's recorded as another name in Northern Europe was Mary's grass.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So run the scientific name, biological name of it by me one more time.
Hierochloe odorata. And that's fragrant holy grass.
The holy is in, mm-hmm. in the meaning. Oh, very interesting. Yeah.
So there's all these, I think, indigenous remnants in even Europe that we've lost because we've left Europe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, our ancestors, our ancestors left Europe, whatever, 100, 200 years ago, mm-hmm. and picked up, and their traditions were mostly lost. We might retain mm-hmm. some food, we might retain a particular church tradition, but all those traditions we had that connected us to the land were wiped away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But sweetgrass is in Northern Europe. Bison are in Northern Europe today. So okay. I'm mostly of Polish descent.
Yep.
There's a bison herd in a national park in Poland. And the name for sweetgrass is Zubrowka, bison grass.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's a story that the grass gives the power to the buffalo.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. It's a connection. Mm-hmm. So you feel that over here in the new country, mm-hmm. right? And still feel that connection, mm-hmm. maybe on a subconscious level even, or a DNA biological level, which is pretty cool.
Well, that's one thing I like to talk to people about when I give a talk. At some point towards the end, I'll say, okay, how many people here descend from indigenous people? Now, immediately, we will rightly think, okay, who here is of Native North American descent? Mm-hmm. And some people raise their hand, oh, you know, I'm a Oglala, or I'm part Potawatomi, or whatever it may mm-hmm. be. Oh, great, great. How many of us descend from indigenous people? And I finally get the group to think about, oh, wait a minute, we all do. Just for some of us, it's been thousands of years that we've gradually transformed into something different than mm-hmm. that. But all of us have a genetic history, 99.999. You could put all the nines you want at the end of our genetic history is indigenous. We lived like indigenous people in a particular place mm-hmm. with traditions that are very similar to Lakota, Diné, or Anishinaabe, whatever indigenous traditions we're familiar with.
Yeah, with our own sacred geography. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to look at mm-hmm. it. I really like that. So you have said that you, at some point, got into really exploring your personal connection, or you know, or your families, or your ancestors, or you know, that connection to sweetgrass, understanding it scientifically and spiritually in your own way. What can you impart to our viewers so that they might understand a power of it for them and how that works?
Well, I would encourage viewers to get to know this relative, right? Especially if you're of European descent. Your ancestors have known it for tens of thousands of years. And now it's an opportunity to reestablish that connection. And I think, mm-hmm. Particularly in the Catholic context, you know, the story of Sky Woman descending from the sky and bringing those seeds and sweetgrass being the first plant on Mother Earth connects beautifully to our traditions about Mary. You know, the oldest traditions of the church is that Mary was assumed into heaven. She never died on earth, but that she was brought up to heaven by Christ, who loved her so much. And so I think that provides this beautiful symmetry and the potential to see, you know, our indigenous traditions informing our theology, and our theology sort of informing indigenous traditions in a circular way, mm-hmm. where Sky Woman fell to the earth and was a part of the creation of this beautiful land we have here. Mary's assumption back up to heaven brings the sweetgrass smoke, you might say, back up to heaven and foreshadows the beauty that is to come.
Mm-hmm. And again, I really like that And I would also say, and I think we're on the same page here too, that you led off the episode talking about four sacred plants that come from the earth, tobacco, sage, cedar, sweetgrass. And if one way to understand the importance of any of those four is pretty simple. You don't have to be told. You and I talked about it a lot, and we had a lot of fun doing it and hopefully imparted some wisdom. But if anybody's ever in doubt of the power, light it up, right? Make that connection, put a flame to any of those things, smell it, breathe it in, let it waft over you, and you will, if you're open to it, if your heart, mind, spirit are open to it, you're going to understand that connection because it's got a way. And you said that interaction between humankind and the plant brings about something pretty special, and you don't have to put a name on it. It exists.
We're so good as humans thinking that we're in charge, and I think that act in Lakota way, but also in the Catholic way, in the use of incense, lets us know, no, sometimes our relatives lead the way. Yeah. And I think this is an opportunity for us to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff. Mm-hmm. Wopila, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today. Appreciate it. And thank you for joining us here in Ho-Choka. Thank you to our viewers for joining us here in Ho-Choka as well. We're at the center of St. Joseph's Indian School campus, where we talk about issues that are central to Native American education today. Until the next time we meet, stay centered.